Welcome to the Attraction Pros Podcast, where professionals in the attractions business can get insight, tips, tools, and even a bit of inspiration. Your hosts are two people familiar with the twists and turns and ups and downs of this great industry. Josh Lieben is the Director of Business Development for Amusement Advantage, and Matt Heller is the founder of Performance Optimist Consulting. Hey there, everybody. Matt Heller here with the Attraction Pros Podcast. Thank you so much for joining us today. Today, we have another episode of Three Questions coming at you. This one is with Adam Blackmore of the city of Henderson in Nevada. And Adam and I had a great conversation, and he had a lot of really great questions. So I think you're going to like this episode. So I'm going to let it roll and hope you enjoy it.
Down yonder on the Chattahoochee, you never knew how much that muddy water meant to me, but I learned how to swim.
Well, hey there, everybody. Matt Heller here, founder of Performance Optimist Consulting and the author of The Myth of Employee Burnout, here with another excellent episode of Three Questions. This is where I get to ask three questions of a guest, they get to ask three questions of me, and we just see where the conversation goes. We don't know what those questions are going to be when we start, so all of our answers are unprepared and unrehearsed. I am super excited to welcome Adam Blackmore to the call today. Adam is the recreation superintendent for the City of Henderson Parks and Rec in Henderson, Nevada. Adam and I met very briefly a couple of years ago and are looking forward to catching up this year at the WWA show in just a couple of weeks in New Orleans. So, Adam, without further ado, if you could just say hello and tell us a little bit about what you do.
All right, sounds good. First off, thank you for having me. It's great to see you again. As you mentioned, I am the recreation superintendent with the city of Henderson. We're actually the Public Works, Parks and Recreation Department. It's kind of a unique setup countrywide, really, especially for the size of our department. About a year ago, a little over a year ago, we merged with our Public Works and our Parks and Recreation departments. And so we're all one big happy family here. So I can try to assist with street maintenance complaints as much as I can assist with a youth programming complaint. But yeah, the general principle of my role is overseeing all of the recreation divisions. So that includes our 6 recreation centers. We have 10 aquatic centers, our 10 aquatic facilities and pools, our outdoor recreation department. We have a large 6,000 capacity pavilion that we host concerts and different events at, and the list goes on and on and on of various things that we offer. We're very proud of Parks and Recreation in Henderson. We're nationally recognized. We've won the gold medal twice for NRPA. There's a great deal of pride from our citizens and our employees with our Parks and Recreation offerings. And I'm relatively new to this role. I've been in it about 6 months. Been with the city almost 5 years, and loving every minute of it. It's a great department, great support from our administration and our city council and our mayor. And, you know, I'll never take that for granted. We really, really enjoy a great relationship with everybody in the city and enjoy being in the position.
Excellent. And you had kind of an aquatics background before you got there, is that right?
Yeah. That's my first job in Parks and Recreation. Was actually in aquatics. It was just I'm not a swimmer by any means. Never claimed to be. I can do just enough to get through the certification. But I did an internship to graduate school at Indiana State University in Terre Haute, and needed an internship to finish that degree. Got one in Plainfield, Indiana, of all places, right outside of Indianapolis. It was in their aquatics section. Learned to become a lifeguard. Learned the ins and outs there of what it means to run a facility. And training and development and working with the teenage workforce. Fell in love with it. Went into the private sector for a few years with Cocoa Key Water Resorts, Rockford, Illinois, and then Kansas City. Loved that, but always had kind of a yearning to get back into public service and working in public administration. So was fortunate enough to parlay that position with Cocoa Key, running their indoor water resort in Kansas City, into the aquatics manager position with the city of Henderson. And the rest is history. Worked my way through the department here and into my current role.
Excellent. Well, that is quite a breadth of experience that I'm sure you're bringing to your position right now. So that's great, because some of the questions that I have for you, I think will tap into some of that experience. All right. So are you ready to get started?
Yeah, let's go.
All right. So here is my first question for you. Speaking of those young employees that you get to work with, and not to give too much away, but at WWA, you're going to be doing a session on recruitment. Mm-hmm. And I wondered, again, without giving too many of your secrets away that you'll be talking about there, could you tell us a little bit about what you've found that works in today's sort of recruitment environment, you know, to help get people and keep people and things like that?
Yeah, well, I think that, you know, I will try to keep all the secrets to a minimum because there's some great content. And if you're watching this and you're going to WWA, it'd be a great session to attend.
Yeah.
But I think that, you know, to start off, the answer to that would be, in my relatively short time in the industry now, it's around 10 years, the challenge of recruitment has grown just exponentially over what it used to be. It used to be, you know, just all you had to do was, you know, at the time, put up a sign saying that you were hiring. It was a little bit before the social media craze came out. So it was as easy as just posting wherever you posted that you were hiring people. And, you know, then you got to pick the litter of who was going to work where. And that is certainly not the case anymore. I think that the demand for part-time teenage labor is higher than it's ever been. I know that it is out in my neck of the woods here. So, you know, the teenagers that we would be recruiting or the college kids that we're recruiting, they have more options than ever. So when you start combining the options that they would have with, you know, some of the extra effort or extra work that would be included to, say, be a lifeguard, where you have to commit maybe financial resources for a training, you have to commit your time to go through that training, you then have to, you know, potentially sit outside in extreme heats, or you have to deal with, you know, a large number of the public or whatever else that would go into that. And your wages are relatively comparative to other part-time jobs where they wouldn't have to invest in that. You know, there's an element there that you're really competing for that teenage worker that wasn't there maybe as much, you know, 9-10 years ago. So some of the things that we've done, again, without giving away too much of the session that we'll be doing, you know, is really honing in on the ancillary benefits, the culture that we're providing, or, you know, some type of an incentive. We really hone in on also something that I think is missed a lot in parks and recreation in general, the value that you're providing to that, you know, 16 to 22 year old for their future growth and their skill sets. You know, not everybody's going to go be a recreation superintendent. You know, whether or not I would like that, you know, it'd be great if everybody stayed in parks and rec or stayed in a service industry, but that's not what everybody's going to do. So we build, you know, what we like to call life lessons. So we spent a good deal of time during our recruitment efforts, whether it's at a job fair or, you know, attending a PTA meeting or just general referral type information that we use our staff to go try to get their friends to come work with us. Honing in on what the job can mean for their future, you know, and so it's not so just saying, well, I don't want to go be a lifeguard because I don't like to swim that much. It's like, well, swimming is one very small component of that. It's a very critical component, obviously, but you're also going to learn, you know, the principles of integrity. You're going to set yourself up with great customer service skills that will be imperative in any job that you're going to go into. You get to go, you know, be around people and have fun, unique experiences. We have challenges. We have all these different things. And that goes into all of the various jobs that we have in Parks and Rec. There's all these different things that we can kind of sell the employee on why maybe coming to work for us would be a step above working for somebody else. And that's not to say that's for everybody. You know, to get a 16-year-old to think what this is going to benefit me for my 30-year-old job interview is kind of a tough thing to do, but it's been beneficial for us. We've also worked very diligently on, like I mentioned, the culture thing. The city of Henderson spends a good deal of time. There's going to be another session at the WWA conference led by two of our aquatics coordinators called Becoming Miyagi. Last year they did an Aquaticon session on creating that culture of family and development and fun and that kind of stuff that really, you know, I've learned with the millennials that, you know, there's a lot of talk out there on millennials and everybody has their opinion on them. But really the principle of them is that they just, that whole group generally just wants to feel like they're part of something bigger than themselves. You know, they get to contribute, whether it's to a cause or to a development or be a part of something really, really cool and unique that isn't just mainstream, you know. And, you know, that type of culture and that type of mindset in our recruitment so far has been very helpful. And I'll go into that in more detail at my session at WWA.
Yes, and I'm glad you plugged that. Anybody who's watching, when is your session at WWA? Do you know the time and date?
Yeah, I do. And so this will be the fourth or fifth time that I've spoke at WWA. And I don't know if I'm being punished or rewarded, but we are the 8:30 or 8:45 session on the Wednesday morning of WWA. So that would be, I think, the 12th. But I'd have to check that. It may be Thursday morning. It's 8:30 in the morning. I know that for sure. Okay. Either Wednesday or Thursday, and it's the first session. And I appreciate everybody who attends getting up early and joining us in New Orleans. So, and I really appreciate the people organizing the conference, giving us that bright and early session as well.
Well, they know that they can trust you to get up
be
there.
That's the compliment part, is I think that they're complimenting me, but I don't know if it's fully fully warranted yet. So
yeah. we'll
find out.
Okay. And, you know, just to kind of follow up a little bit, on that, you know, you talk a lot about community and culture, and I appreciate what you said, that it can be tough to kind of get that to a 16-year-old. You know, how is this going to, you know, our community and culture, how is that going to benefit you when you're 30 or 40 or down the road and things like that? But, you know, it's kind of goes back to what's in it for me. And they don't necessarily know what they want in it for them yet.
Sure.
You know, so I think that it's great that you're kind of taking that tactic.
Yeah, it's strange in a way, because you are kind of shooting at a moving target with that, because there is the element of, you know, your inclination right off the bat is that what's in it for them is a paycheck, you know. And I think that when I was 16, that's all I wanted. You know, you could give me any job and just, okay, as long as I can pay for gas, that's fine. But yeah, like we're saying, is for some of our young recruits and our teenage workforce, and we have you know, almost at any given time, 600 to 800 teenagers, you know, part-time employees, mostly teenagers working for us. You know, they're all motivated by different things. So to be as naive to think that it's strictly related to a pay rate, you know, is something we try to avoid.
Excellent. Excellent point. Yeah. I like the way you said that too.
Thanks.
Yeah. So do you have a question for me?
I do. Yeah. So I wrote down a couple because I think they're so fantastic. there's a lot out there, and I just saw in the Harvard Business Review, there's a lot of talk out there about meetings. And I go back and forth on my opinion of meetings. So this is kind of it's a multiple part question, but you can just give me your overall philosophy. You know, with your background and all the trainings you've done and working on efficiency and productivity and all those other things, just your overall meeting philosophy. Do you think that you should have regular meetings and check-ins? You know, a lot of people do these daily, you know, check-in with everybody in a group and then disperse. You know, people do regular meetings every week that are 2 hours long, and 2 hours is great. Just generally speaking, how do you feel about meetings with your teams?
Well, I think you've got to have a reason to be meeting. So if you can't really define it, if you're just meeting to meet and you've got this meeting on the schedule that's been there for 3 years and it's reoccurring every 2 weeks, you have to kind of define why you're getting together. What's the purpose of it? And again, I'll go back to what's in it for me, because that's what people are thinking when they get to the meeting, right? What's going to be my benefit out of this meeting? I will say that, you know, there's various kinds of meetings that you want to take into consideration. For instance, a one-on-one with your manager, I think, is extremely helpful, because it gives you the opportunity to really kind of work through issues. They might kind of tell you what's going on. You get to share what you're doing. And then there's some brainstorming and, you know, however you want to set that up. I think one of the critical things about that is that it doesn't get canceled. You know, it's something that is always going to happen. You know what's going to happen. And it's a very valuable meeting. Now, it doesn't have to go on. You know, if you schedule it for an hour and you've only got 45 minutes worth of stuff to talk about, that's fine. But I think that particular type of meeting, I think, is really critical and can be really helpful both to the manager and to the employee. I think in terms of like a staff meeting, again, I think you have to know why you're meeting. Are you meeting to just provide information to people? Is that the best way to get that information across? Could that have been done, you know, if everybody on your team is a full-time team member, they've all got access to email, and it's just something that you want to get to them, that's fine. You know, maybe you can email that out. You know, I think one of the funniest things I've seen out there is a banner that people have, you know, have been sharing that says, you know, I just went to a meeting that should have been an email kind of thing.
Right.
So I think we have to really watch why we're having a meeting so that we can be respectful of people's time. If you want to get together with a group of people so you can brainstorm some ideas, so that you can gather some suggestions from people, I think that's a great opportunity to do so. But at the same time, you should also prepare them for that. So you're not kind of walking in blind and saying, you know, I don't know why we're meeting. I don't know. Adam called and said he wants to meet with us in an hour. Okay, great. Well, let's go meet. And then you want us to kind of dive into this real deep topic that I haven't had a chance to think about yet. So I'm probably not going to have a lot of input right off the bat, because people do need time to process those things. So if you are getting together to get suggestions from people, then you kind of have to prepare them first.
Right.
You know, in our industry, a lot of times people use kind of the daily stand-up meeting or the daily information download kind of thing. And I think if they're short, if they're, again, respectful of people's time, if they're giving people information that they really need to know, then I think those can be very, very valuable. The meetings that I don't think are valuable are the ones that are not run well. By that I mean the person running it doesn't have an agenda. They don't know how to kind of keep things on track. Even if they do have an agenda and you're 2 hours into the meeting and you notice that you're only on agenda number two, or, you know, item number two out of eight, your head's going to explode. So the meeting's got to be run well. It's got to have a purpose. You know, those are the kind of things that I think really you have to take into consideration if you're going to have some sort of meeting with your staff. And is this really the best use of their time? So those are some of the things I think about when I kind of think about meetings.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that, you know, in some element, I've seen a shift in that mindset as well. You know, I think there was a time, at least for me, where any meeting was a productive meeting. You know, you could go in there and you could sit for 2 hours, like you're saying, and just talk about the weather. And you walked out like, okay, I had a 2-hour meeting and that was great. But now there is such this onus on don't waste my time. Mm-hmm. You know, everybody's doing less with more or more with less, you know, and it's interesting to see that mind shift. Don't overschedule me. We've been here for 30 minutes. We could have been out 15 minutes ago. And like, as the meeting facilitator, there's such an element of feeling the room and that, mm-hmm. you know, if like, is everybody engaged? Is this productive? And if it's not, then yes, stop wasting everybody's time. Don't be afraid to cut the meeting short. Say, okay, we'll see you guys next week or whatever. And then follow up after that. And then to your point, then an art that I'm starting to get better at is knowing when to move to the next agenda item, you know, and when it becomes, you know, off topic, or maybe it's still somewhat on topic, but it's something that should be tabled either for a one-on-one discussion that somehow bred its way to the group, or, you know, it's something that should require a follow-up discussion for that topic alone. For the group that is, because you feel like if everybody's engaged and you're talking about the same thing, this is really great. But what you're really doing is you're using, you know, huge chunks of time and staying to that schedule, you know, is something that's tough to do sometimes, because you feel like you got a really engaged group. So let's keep this going. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, you need to understand you have a finite amount of time for your meeting, and you don't want to, you know, go 30, 45 minutes late just because you had an open dialogue there. You want to kind of keep it on schedule, follow up on it later. So that's good. That's good. I appreciate the feedback. Took some good notes there. So.
My pleasure. Well, and you just mentioned something that I think is sorely missing from a lot of meetings, and that's the follow-up. You know, great, yeah. We have this meeting and we have this deep discussion, and then nothing happens afterwards. Nobody knows who's assigned to do what. And things just kind of get lost, and then you get back together with your next meeting. Didn't we talk about that already? Weren't we supposed to do something? Mm-hmm. And those kind of things get lost. You know, and I also think there's a balance. You know, I mentioned, you know, can this information be done via email? And, you know, absolutely, like you said, are we wasting people's time? But depending on the team, and I think this is the leader's decision, or the leader's, you know, kind of looking at the team, is there value to FaceTime? You know, with mm-hmm. with a team, you know, because obviously only certain things, only certain things can be communicated via email. And when you get in a room with people, the dynamic changes. So is it worth getting together if you've got the right kind of things to talk about, it, if you've got a good agenda? Is it worth getting people in the same room to kind of talk things out and hash things out and that type of thing? I do think that there is value to FaceTime, but it's again, balancing that with, am I wasting people's time just to get them to look at each other?
Yeah. You know? No, and that's what, you know, we run into that sometimes where you don't. It's almost like a wedding invitation, you know, like you don't want to let somebody, you don't want anybody to be offended. So you end up bringing all of these people in and they really either have no real involvement in what you're talking about or their involvement is so little that they're going to get a 2-minute segment out of an hour long meeting. When in reality, yeah, if you take thorough notes, you have thorough follow up. And then in that follow up, maybe that would be where you would get them a little bit more included. You know, otherwise, you're either, like you said, you're wasting somebody's time or you're bringing in so many voices and so many opinions to a meeting that you're losing some of the productivity. So I think that's a good point. So.
Well, and, you know, you hit on another thing, you know, getting the right people there or, you know, because I think it's, you know, bad the other way, too. If you're hearing about a meeting that you should have been in.
Yeah.
You know, because you didn't get an invitation to the wedding.
Right.
So thinking about that beforehand. Excellent. Excellent.
Good.
Yeah. Right. You ready for your next one then?
Yeah, hit me.
All right. So as part of what you were talking about in terms of what you do, you oversee a lot of things and a lot of people. You know, and a lot of times in leadership, we talk about, you know, how we lead our folks. And you mentioned that not everybody is motivated by the same things. But I wanted to kind of talk about two specific groups, if we could, just for a second, in terms of, you know, maybe how you approach them from a leadership standpoint, and that's full-time folks, people that are there full-time versus part-time. Are there different things, different tactics that you use to manage, you know, those two groups a little differently?
So I think that, sure, yes, the answer to your question would be yes. So we have, like I said, it's a pretty large department. In our recreation division alone, we're working with upwards of 65 full-time employees throughout our various areas in the department. Then, like I mentioned, our part-time, you know, complement is also pretty large. And there are different ways to lead those types of groups. You know, I think that the first obvious thing would be that you're full-time, you know, you're anticipating that they're able to maybe see the bigger picture a little bit easier. You know, there's going to be a level of maturity there, a level of communication that may be a little bit different than, you know, some of your new to the workforce type of employees and your part-time staff. That's not always the case, but that's the general, you know, going into it, that's going to be the assumption. The other thing is I spend a lot of time and we spend a lot of time in discussion on succession planning and development. You know, and where do you want your career to go? You know, and we tell this to our entry level full time when they come in, especially working in the public sector, is this can be your career. You know, this can be what you do with your life. And it's a wonderful thing. And let me give you the benefits of that. And then let's talk it out on if this is something that you think you'd be interested in. If it is, what do we have to do to get you, you know, up the chain, if you will, or give you a better opportunity to be qualified to move up the ladder a little bit? Whereas on the part-time level, you're really honing in on, you know, like we mentioned, the skill development stuff, learning how to be a good employee. You know, especially we had so many employees here that are brand new to the workforce who don't understand, you know, the basic principles of punctuality and professionalism and, you know, the value in a tucked-in shirt. You know, that kind of stuff that sometimes just needs to be reinforced on kind of a more of a micro level. So that development is honed in on there until, you know, they become a little bit more seasoned or they have the personality or the skill set that's going to work for a higher level type management role in the part-time ranks. And that's what we're really focusing a lot of attention with the part-time development and mentoring. Whereas, like I said, the full-time is, you know, not everybody wants to move up the ladder, but everybody should want to better themselves and play a part in bettering your organization. And so that's where we're really honing a lot of our efforts in on our full-time is their own personal development, but then also developing them to an extent that they're able to relate and groom and mentor their part-time employees to make them, you know, good representatives of the community. Especially if you work in a public sector, you are obviously you're funded by the people you are serving in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. So it's imperative that not only are we providing good service, but we're doing it, in a way that would make the citizens proud that their tax dollars are going towards that service and that employee. And so that's in a nutshell, kind of where we focus our attention. But there is a difference, and it starts with, you know, just the way that we're communicating. But I will say, I think that that's overblown sometimes, and not to get too long-winded here, but, a lot of times they do create this divide. It's like, okay, well, this is just the part-time employee, so this is about as much say as they're allowed to have. And this is the full-time employee, so since they're a full-time employee, they get to have all this other say and influence. And I don't really work like that. We've actually recently created something I call the Part-Time Advisory Council. So we have, you know, anywhere of 19 to 21 different areas or centers in our recreation division. And every one of those 19 to 21 areas now has a part-time representative on this council. They're hand-selected by the recreation manager over that division. They are there exclusively to work with me on what we can do to, you know, better the working environment for part-time employees, to ensure that part-time employees have a voice in the division, you know, and some of our best ideas were, sometimes you get to be a full-time employee or you get to be an administrator and you get this, you know, this weird arrogance of, you know, my way or the highway, I've already done there, I've got all these great ideas. But the best ideas I've found come from the innovators, you know, and an innovator can be a 60-year-old or, you know, a 16-year-old. It doesn't matter. It's a mindset. So we're really pushing this part-time advisory council to come to the table with innovative ideas on things we can do differently across the board operationally, things we can do differently for their specific areas, you know, and without even knowing it, those part-time employees are being mentored and groomed on things like the proper way to conduct a meeting, the proper way to compromise, the proper way to hear no and move on to the next idea, you know, without holding a grudge, the proper way to implement ideas that are really good, and move it from the idea phase to the operational phase. So all those things, you know, are great. And I think that they're only going to help our department moving forward because it'll create that full buy-in culture, you know, and I use that opportunity to tell them things, you know, department updates, things coming down the pipe, things like that, that, you know, they're then responsible for relaying that to their fellow part-time coworkers, that maybe if we just did it the old-fashioned way of me sending out a memo and hoping that it trickled all the way down, wouldn't be nearly as effective. So that's proven effective so far, and I think it's going to do great things for us.
That's excellent. I really appreciate your outlook on that. You know, not looking at them as separate folks, but, you know, just like any individual, you know, that might need a little bit different type of attention, you know, they have a different type of attention that they need. And certainly, I think your process addresses the need to be heard, which I think can be something that is greatly overlooked when you look at people who are, you know, in a part-time type role. And some people even think, well, they're just here for the summer, you know, what possible input could they possibly have, you know? So I really appreciate what you have to say about that and how you run that.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. I think that, you know, it kind of goes to your myth of the employee burnout. You know, it's not so that so much I've learned that employees are ever really burned out. It's just they're frustrated or they're, you know, it's what they don't feel like their input's going to be valuable. So I'll just come in, go about my business, and that's as valuable as I'm going to be. And, you know, it's our job from the part-time manager level all the way up to our director, all the way up to our city manager, to reinforce the value of every single employee that works for us. And it's a challenge when you're talking about, you know, thousands of employees in an organization. It's one that I don't think anybody should shy away from. We should really tackle that head on and make sure that the newest hire to the most senior employee all feel that they're contributing to something that's better. So
absolutely. And if it were easy to do that, everybody would do it.
That's exactly right. Yeah. It's really easy to, you know, go into your burnout thing. It's really easy to just use burnout as an excuse or time as an excuse or whatever. And, you know, when it comes to developing your full-time and your part-time employees alike, your entire team, there is no excuse for not making that a priority. So
absolutely. Yeah. Great.
All right. You ready for the second one from me?
You betcha.
Okay. So you give a lot of advice, you know, being a consultant in this industry. What's the best advice that you've ever received? And why do you think that that was the case?
The best advice I've ever received. Whew. And I've received a lot. You know, sometimes it's easier to be open to the advice than others.
Yeah.
I think the advice that I've gotten kind of over and over again from different people is to trust in myself and to sort of be myself. And I think when I look at what I'm currently doing in my role of trying to help other people, and speaking and being involved with the attractions industry, those are all really extensions of who I think I am, at least. So I think when people have said, you know, you're on the right path, keep it going, you know, trust in your instincts, because if you look back, you know, on things that have been successful in your life, your instincts have been pretty well honed. So continue, even though there's going to be some challenges that you come up with and roadblocks and things where you're really unsure, you know, if you kind of stick to your guns of who you are, you know, don't stray away from, you know, what it is that you are passionate about, you know, that's what's going to help you be successful in the future. And I think that's what has helped me continue to be successful. And it's something that I remind myself and give myself that advice a lot. Because when I first started, when I first left Universal and was out on my own as a speaker, I was trying to do so many different things because, you know, at Universal, my role was really defined. You know, I was the senior trainer of leadership development and I knew what I was supposed to do and I had a job description and that was great. You know, but when I got out on my own, I had all these different ideas of kind of where I wanted to go and how I could do things. And some of the advice that I have kind of shied away from a little bit is when people say, well, you know, you talk about leadership, so you could do that with any industry. Well, that's probably true, but I don't have the passion for every industry. You know, it's really hard. And I talked about this before. It's hard for me to go into a bank or into a hospital and talk about great guest service and leadership because I'd rather, it's just me, I'd rather talk to people who are, you know, running an entertainment facility or guest service facility or, you know, those type of things that really get me jazzed and excited. Sure. And so to keep following that passion is what helps me kind of keep moving in the direction that I want to go. So I think that's probably been the best thing for me.
Yeah, that's great. That's one of the, you learn that that's one of the hardest things to do too, is not just let your job description define you, you know, and it's easy to do that sometimes. Say, oh, I guess I'm just this title. And so that's what I do. So being yourself and having that individuality, that's great, man. So,
yeah. Well, and you it's funny you use that word just, because I go back to the part-time, full-time discussion. Well, I'm just a part-timer. You
right.
know? And yeah. you get in that mindset of, well, I must not be that valuable.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's the kind of stuff that would drive me crazy. But there are a lot of people that do that, you know. And sometimes I understand that that's kind of a crutch, maybe for, you know, less passionate performance. You know, is, you know, well, I'll just go do my job and we'll leave it there. And you know, I think that if people understand that, you know, I think generally speaking, individuals want to, like I said, be a part of something cool and different, and understand their role in that. That's great. So. Good stuff.
I think it's tough for people to kind of step out of whether it's a job description or the mold that other people have made for them to mm-hmm. step out of that to do something really cool and different that they want to do.
Yeah, you know, I agree. And so, sometimes that mold isn't even just work related.
Right.
You know, it's their personal life, just their life in general. Like, you're the quiet one, or you're the outgoing loud one, you're the class clown, whatever it is. And, you know, and that's something that my staff, you know, I think that they put up with, they love it or they hate it. I don't know. But I'm huge on cross training, mm-hmm. pushing people outside of the box of, you know, their comfort limits, not getting tied in, you know, to certain, you know, well, I'm the aquatics person, or I'm the, you know, senior services person. It's like, no, you are the parks and recreation person. You are the customer service person. You are here for all. And you know, get them outside of those boxes. I think that's, you know, the quiet people, you know, ask them, make them get up and you know, tell somebody something awesome that they've done, you know, so that they can really feel that value. You know, the outgoing people, maybe, hey, go sit over here and watch for a little while, you know, that kind of thing.
Observe. Yeah.
Observe and listen and soak it in and then report out. And you can report out as colorfully as you want to, but let somebody else have the spotlight for a second. So exactly. It's a balance.
Absolutely. Sure. Absolutely. I use that word all the time, balance, when it comes to leadership. So, all right, you ready for your last one?
All right, go ahead.
All right. So if you could live the real life of any TV character.
Oh my.
So if you could put yourself in the position of a TV character or a movie character or something like that, who would it be and why?
Oh my gosh, that's a great question. I do like TV.
Okay.
I got it. All right, so I'm going to go with Game of Thrones.
Okay.
And I'm going to go with Peter Dinklage's character. I think it's Tyrion's his father. So I'm blanking on it right now, but let's just go with Peter Dinklage's character.
Okay.
And the reason I'm going to pick Peter Dinklage's character is because I think that number one is he gets to have all kinds of fun. It seems like, you know, he's an energetic, free flowing kind of spirit out there that basically, you know, doesn't let life hold him down.
Okay.
But in addition to all of that, he's also very open-minded. You know, he kind of meets people in the middle. He's willing to compromise on a lot of things. He sees the faults in some of his family's issues, you know, and he's trying to work through that. And he's definitely a guy who brings other people together, you know, and, you know, at the same time, he still gets to hang around with dragons and, you know, beautiful queens and sit up in the top of big high towers, you know, and run things and have an oversight of that. So I think that that seems like it would be pretty cool. You know, and, you know, that being said, you know, that's a great question. There's a lot of that out there, but I think I'd go with him.
Okay. Very good. Very good. And even if you went, you know, even more obscure, you had the backup of why. So that was the
right. Yeah. That was tough, man. There's so many running through my head.
Well, after we stop recording, you can tell me all the other ones. So
yeah, that sounds good. I'm going to have to, I can't believe I'm in a complete blank of what his name is on the show. So we'll have to figure that one out.
Excellent. Excellent. Good. And good reasons. Really good. Really good reasons in terms of the personality and that type of thing. So excellent. I'm ready for my last one.
All right. So your last one, we'll go with kind of a fun one here.
Okay.
Is how many countries, if you know, have you visited, and which one was your favorite and why?
Oh my gosh. So I just did my largest exploration of other countries recently. My wife and I went on a Mediterranean cruise.
Oh, me
and,
too.
Did you?
Go to Greece?
No, we didn't go to Greece. We went to like Italy, France, Spain.
Oh, cool. Okay.
Yeah. So I've been to those countries. I've been to Mexico, been to Canada. And I'm going to have to go with probably mostly because of the food. And that was Italy. I was fascinated by Italy, and my wife and I took some kind of off the beaten path tours. We did a food tour in Rome. We did made pizza in Naples. And, so that is a country I would definitely want to go back to and explore more. Because on the cruise you get, you know, if you're lucky, 12 hours in a port, you know, and we went from port to port to port. So we didn't get a whole lot of time, you know, to spend really exploring. We had to kind of go do one thing and then get back to the ship. So, Italy is definitely a place that I would love to go back to.
Cool.
So, yeah. Yeah.
Very good.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's beautiful. We actually, when we went on the cruise there, we spent a couple of days in Venice, and it's the second time I've been there, and I go back there a few more times. It's beautiful. It's a great country. So Tyrion Lannister, by the way.
Okay. Awesome.
So we're good now.
I was going to have to look it up and put it on a little title.
Yeah. I knew it was Tyrion. I just couldn't remember the Lannister part for whatever reason.
Okay. So. Very good.
Very cool.
Very good. Well, I think is that all the questions?
That's it.
Three and three?
All right. Yep.
Fantastic. Well, Adam, thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate it. Loved all of your perspectives. A lot of really, really good insight and information. And if you are listening to this or watching this and you are going to WWA 2016, go see Adam's session on recruitment so you can hear all the other secrets that he has on how to recruit folks. And I'm sure it's going to be wonderful. So again, Adam, thank you very much for your time and hope to see you soon.
All right, Matt. Thanks, man. I appreciate it.
My pleasure. Yeah, went down yonder on the Chattahoochee. You never knew how much that muddy water. Thank you for joining us on the Attraction Pros Podcast. For more information on Josh Liebman, please visit AmusementAdvantage.com. For more information on Matt Heller, please visit PerformanceOptimist.com.